I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Anywhere but
thank you for
seat.
That smattering of applause. I appreciate it. It's hard to compete with like three nights of Drawbreaker shows a few weeks ago, but he's here, so that's pretty awesome. I think he's watching right now. Hey, welcome to Going Off Tracks, 300th podcast episode. How many of you have seen our live shows before by a show of hands? Awesome. Great. Thanks. Put your hands down. Save your strength. to my immediate right, I have to welcome... I'm Steven. To my immediate right, please welcome Benny Horowitz. You might know him from Gaslight Anthem, or for the more hardcore among you, The Low End Theory.
Deep cut.
To my far right, Mr. Brad Goop from The Goops, renowned producer. Actually, Brad is good at everything. If we screw up anything, we ask Brad to fix it down to like a Facebook post because we're all fairly incompetent.
But the Richard Dreyfuss mustache is looking a little thin.
Yeah, you got to thicken that up. That's pretty
good. Does renown mean no credits?
What'd you say?
Does renown mean no credits?
Yes, renown means no credits,
yeah,
Brad.
I'm totally renowned.
No, you're on the Mallrats soundtrack. You're awesome.
That's real?
That is real.
Yeah, Brad, you're on the Mallrats soundtrack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I did.
to his immediate left, the heart and soul of the podcast, Mr. Jonah Bayer. Music journalist extraordinaire. All his Instagram followers are here. Thank you for being here. He's in United Nations, also known as my daughter Kate's favorite band.
That's true.
She's turning 7 in a week. So
that's impressive.
Already pretty awesome. Again, 300th episode. We started this about, what, 6-7 years ago?
I think 6 years ago. Yeah, six or 7 maybe. Yeah.
Gosh, it's bonkers, and here we are.
2012?
Yeah. They were simpler times.
Early.
They were better times.
Early in 2012.
Weren't they? Back at Rubber Tracks, where Brad worked at a recording studio owned by Converse. So part of the reason we would get so many awesome guests is we would say, would you like free shoes?
And part of the reason we're all still wearing free Converse.
And we're all still wearing free Converse.
These are Docs.
Yeah.
That's
you weren't around for that part.
What other podcasts are you doing, man?
The Doc Martin podcast. Anything that gets me free shoes, man. You guys got beat.
Yeah. We got a lot of free programming. You never took the Converse.
No, I didn't. I'm embarrassed to admit it.
Why?
But I have weird feet. Yeah, like the second toe on each of my foot is a hammer toe.
What does that
mean?
Then
the little toe, they're like locked like this. Anyone have hammer toes? Cool. And then the last one on each side kind of tucks under. So it's created a bit of a foot problem for me now that I'm old. And I go to a podiatrist named Dr. Cho.
Oh, okay.
Good plug. The name is literally Dr. Toe.
Oh, Dr. Toe.
And I trade him Nets tickets to shave off my calluses on the bottoms of my feet.
I can't think
the
of
Converse
a better...
They're not good for that. They're flat. They got these, like, solid bases. They just hurt your feet. They're not good for your feet. So every, like, old skateboarder still trying to look cool is just going to be, like, limping around at, like, 50.
I can't think of a better opener for this podcast than your calluses getting shaved off.
I knew all about this. Me and Benny have talked about this before.
You've talked about this?
Yes.
Oh, this is not a secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought everyone knew about
it. I like limp around my house. I have house slippers because of this.
Really?
Yeah. Home slippers. I know. I'm just teaching my kid to bring them to me now.
Oh, that's good. That's smart.
Yeah, that's the next step. It's really weird hearing my voice like this.
Yeah, I think we should. So Benny said he was nervous before we came out. Benny, who's played in front of bigger crowds than any of us have even.
Yeah, I'm quite exposed.
So let's work through this.
All right. So the thing I'm nervous about, even right now, I'm like, kind of like, what do you do with your body? You know? Like that scene in Talladega Nights.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Like,
what do you do with your hands? I don't know really what to do. And then I hear my voice, and I'm like, wow, that's weird. You know? Because I'm not used to it.
So you don't listen to the podcast after you record it?
Very rarely, actually. Yeah. So this is strange for me. So thanks.
Do you want to put some drums around you?
It would make me feel a lot more comfortable. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't have a battle plan set up. Like, ever since Dimebag Darrell got killed, like, I've always had this, like, thing in place in my head if someone jumped up here trying to fuck me up, you know? And, like...
That's a rough segue, dude.
Wait, what? Yo, it's just getting real, man.
I know.
You might as well just pull the band-aid. Let's just get real.
Okay.
These people came out, you know? I'm not going to lie.
What's your normal plan? Like, if you're on stage with Gaslight?
It's a stick plan.
Okay.
So if I see someone, it's a left stab and a right bop and then run. That's my plan. That's the extent of it. But I'm armed with nothing here. I'm even afraid to bring my pocket knife on the train these days.
Yeah.
There's all those cops around, you know?
And you're the first one they're going to go after.
Maybe. I would go after me if I saw me on the train, all dull-eyed and listening to some shit. Like, listen to Black Breath.
You can do a good bop with an SM58.
Yeah?
Just hold it down low.
I don't know. And even I thought my hair was going to be crazy. I put coconut oil in my hair.
You're the one that smelled good backstage.
My wife made me change.
What did you have on before? What was the pre-show wardrobe?
I had like a gray pullover sweatshirt, like a white under. I thought it was like pretty cool.
Okay.
And I was FaceTiming with her and my kid. And she's like, nah, you should change. You should wear like a button up. And then I show up and see that we all wore like the white dudes who don't dress up, trying to dress up outfit. Which is like, we still wore our jeans, but put on like the one shirt we have on a hanger. It nearly happened.
But usually that shirt for me is this shirt. I have almost the same one that's usually what I wear.
I'm wildly embarrassed. Sorry. Thanks for wearing something cool and different. Are these corduroy?
Yeah, they're corduroy. Yeah. Thank you. It's cold out.
It's awesome.
Yeah, no, I try to wear what my wife chooses for me, and I always end up wearing a t-shirt and bumming her out. So this is...
Well, I did run into your wife earlier, and she was wearing a Eagles won the Super Bowl hat.
Yeah, so she's from Philly.
Yeah, so step...
Has she taken it off?
Wait, that's not good?
No.
Sorry.
But I was making a joke that Brooklyn is so gentrified now that she probably won't take any shit for it. You know? So there's all these Eagles fans here now. They didn't used to be.
Yeah, it's a bold move. It's a bold statement.
Yeah.
Shall we bring out Laura?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think we have to. I don't know where she is, but please welcome our first guest. She's been on the podcast a number of times. She's going to be performing for you guys later. We adore her. We know you will, too. Please welcome Laura Stevenson.
Hey, Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Oh, hi.
So we got over all that stuff I was talking about earlier.
Yeah. I was over there listening. Yeah.
You told her about how you were all nervous?
Yeah, she's helped me out. She's a pro. Seasoned pro, you know?
Yes.
She gets in front of humans all the time.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
That's Brad's thing.
I want a reason to be here.
Do you feel more comfortable now? Oh, like you got a drink? You could do that with
I'm
your hands.
I'm mixing Jameson and coffee.
That's
not going to help.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's a speedball.
It can only...
Exactly.
Irish speedball.
That's where... Like, I wish I could just do a J-bone up here right now. If we could just pass something around.
That would make it worse for me. I would be not good. No, I would not at all.
React well to the T, the H, and C?
No. I used to love it as a teenager. Now it just makes me feel like I'm going to die. Hi.
Have you ever robo-tripped?
Oh, on Robitussin, no. Yeah. No. I think I Dramamined by accident.
Wait, what?
Because you can if you resist Dramamine, if you take too much of it, it's, I think, a similar thing.
Really?
Or just it induces panic. I don't really know. I can't tell the difference between tripping and panic attack.
It's been what I keep thinking about when people are like, am I going to let a bunch of kids who eat Tide Pods tell me about guns? And I'm like, motherfucker, like the drugs every generation did that were so crazy. I was like licking glue sticks. I was like, yeah, robo tripping. We thought we could get drunk off like breath spray. Mm-hmm. Like there's all sort, like I'm like Tide Pod, sure.
Yeah, let's try it.
Like it sounds totally normal to me.
I don't, still don't understand the Tide Pod thing.
It doesn't even get you high, which
it doesn't.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
It's just like my body can tolerate this.
Got
it's
it.
Like the only thing about
oh,
it.
Oh,
eating
okay.
soap?
You know, this is a thing. You know, you haven't seen this?
I heard it. I heard it was all bullshit.
Oh, no, it's real. Kids are eating them. I mean, I don't know how many.
No, they're not.
It was probably like two, and then the you know media just no. jumped on it.
Have you tried it?
No, I'm not going to do
it. It's legal.
I'm too old now.
Oh, yeah. What about like a dishwasher?
That's what I'm thinking. Why not Cascade Pods? Why does Tide yeah. get to corner the fucking market?
Because that's okay to use point. On things you eat off of, so it might be safer.
That's yeah. true. Yeah, wait. That's a good point.
Yeah.
You're not
yeah.
supposed to eat off your clothes.
Yeah.
That is true. Mm. Even though I do, if I spill something, I will.
Mm, exactly.
So you were painting yeah. all day?
I was, yes.
In your house?
Yes, I'm painting a ceiling very slowly.
And
we like were a mural or just...
No, but I was thinking about because it's taken me 2 days because I have a 4-inch roller. Is this boring? So like, also I've injured this hand, so I can't use the stick. So I have a sagittal band injury, which
what,
is
what?
Like,
what's that mean?
It's basically like it's the thing that like lets your finger go like this. So as a ooh. Guitar player, like being able to do that is pretty important.
Kind of big.
I'd say
so,
crucial.
So we said, hey, why not play?
Yeah, I'll play, but I will only paint with this hand. So I've been like on a chair doing like, it's also like acoustic tiles. Is this boring? I can't tell.
No, keep it going.
I just, I'm going to stop in the middle of it and find out. It's acoustic tiles. So each acoustic tile takes me like 30 seconds.
Who, are you building a studio?
No, it's just there are acoustic tiles. I don't know. You
what
know
does that
how
mean?
Some people put them up and then they look bad and then you just paint over them and it's, does anybody else know?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
They're like the tiles, like the little like they're like flimsy like styrofoam. Like
are there any school? Contractors here?
Yeah, like in a school or like in church.
Like, school
like if
tiles.
You're in like a modern church, you know, and they're just kind of like they look like shit. I don't know if it's asbestos. I've been breathing it in all day though. So.
Probably is.
They might
Let's
not,
hope not.
Might yeah. not even be real. Well, I have a question for you. When is the Chris Farron, Jeff Rosenstock, Laura Stevenson's supergroup happening with Benny on drums?
Oh. Whenever you're available.
Yo, I'm game.
I'm available.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything.
Oh, that was anticlimactic. More of a fight for
tonight.
It.
Well, now you got to be like the, what was that like fat dude that got all the boy bands big back in the day?
Who
took all the
money?
Yes.
I don't know, but good opener. Be like the fat dude.
Yeah, he was heavy.
Yeah, he was.
He was.
And a molester, so thanks.
Was he really?
Yes.
Oh, all right. See, I didn't follow up his story.
I'm going to change the subject.
Good call.
Benny, earlier we were talking about Brugger's Bagels.
Yeah?
About how you work there.
Yeah, terrible job.
And we were talking about the Leonardo da Veggie.
Yeah, I didn't remember any names of these sandwiches till he said it so specifically.
Was anyone else vegetarian and then you had to order that and it was like really embarrassing?
Jonah, the king of puns, embarrassed by the great pun, Leonardo da Veggie. That job sucked.
What was the worst part about working at Brugger's Bagels?
Well, it was like a 3 to 6 after school job where I was basically like cleanup dude.
Okay.
So I'd clean the tables, clean the floors, dishes, that big like bagel vat that they do the dipping in. I don't know if you've ever worked in the bagel industry.
Never.
Yeah. So before, you know, you do the dough, you don't just toss it in the oven. It needs to soak
right.
in a hot bath of water and maybe some barley and things of this nature, which is not fun to clean.
Can you make beer out of bagel juice?
Oh, my God, Laura. That's amazing.
People would buy that. People would buy it.
Probably.
All right.
It'd be kosher.
Laura, what was your worst job ever?
Yeah.
Not the bagel store. I worked at a bagel store.
Did you really?
Bagel Man. Yeah, I'm from Long Island.
So you're familiar with what he's talking about?
Oh, of course. Yes.
Wow.
I
proper East Coasters, man.
Yeah.
Just eat bagels.
That's what you do. I was a Snapple stalker at a deli called Busco's, but I was too young to work, so they just kept me in the fridge like all summer. But it was pretty fun.
You only stock Snapple?
Really? Only they had like a giant. It was like when Snapple was like
yeah,
dude,
really
Snapple was huge.
Yeah, filling Snapple containers.
takes a long time.
It's hard.
Especially if you take your time with it, which
right.
I did.
If you do, because there's always, I've been in this industry, so there's two types of people, right? There are the ones who like just haphazardly bring a bunch of Snapple over and see what fits. Mm-hmm. And then there's the people that go through and make a very itemized list of what they need to bring. Mm-hmm. Which type were you?
I would say maybe A.
You were A.
I was a little haphazard, but then I kind of just sat.
I hated
with my
fucking
thoughts.
Working after you so bad.
I always did the labels out.
I was
though.
Like, who put an extra mint behind two empty
you just
peaches?
Stick it at
this
the
is
end.
Fucking bullshit, man. Some lazy ass who didn't make
that was me.
Sheet.
Mango Madness on the back of all of the
yeah
all
thanks.
The lines.
Thanks for that.
This is a delicious flavor.
So Busco's?
Yeah, Busco's.
Is there a deli in Long Island without an Italian last name?
Probably not.
I don't think so. So wait, you have an old house.
Right? I do. It's from 1850.
And it's where you wrote Cock Shore.
No, we just bought this house January 16th.
Okay. Oh, a new old house.
Yeah, so it's brand new, but that's... record I wrote in another old house.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. With a frozen attic, I heard.
Yeah. Ugh, yes.
What was the vibe writing that record?
Cold. It was like the kitchen was so badly insulated that cans would explode. Like seltzer cans.
Whoa.
Would
That's
explode.
A weird old house thing. My old house is like that. You open a cabinet and there's a breeze. It's like
yeah.
a very old, I guess, because they're like, this is where the fire is. So.
Yeah, well, our kitchen was an add-on, and we met the guy in a bar that, like, did, like, the contractor. He was like, oh, yeah, I put a kitchen on in that house. And I was like, oh, of course you did.
You suck.
Sucks.
So you did one record in one old house, and so you're going to just, each old house you purchase will have a different album?
I guess so. I got to start writing. I haven't been home, really, so maybe tomorrow. Oh, no. The next day. I've got a wedding tomorrow. But then I'll start writing.
What's the next step in the house? Tile?
I got to do the kitchen ceiling. This kitchen ceiling is real shit.
What do you work? Oh, this is the plaster
this
we were
the
talking
plaster,
about?
Yeah. It's all a mess.
We were talking about how cool it is that you can just learn to do that shit on YouTube now.
Yeah.
You don't need anything but YouTube and tools.
Yeah. This old That's house, it. There's so many... There's... So much this old house to watch on YouTube.
The internet makes things kind of punk rock in a way, doesn't it? Like yeah. you can sort of do anything yourself
DIY.
Now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But and are you talking about skim coating or just putting up like peat rock?
I don't know what
it's
it is.
It's a big
needs.
Difference.
It's got a real problem. So it might be like actually reinforcing the plaster with like.
You guys remember how much this joists? Sucked before you owned a home?
Oh, yeah. That's like a whole ceiling.
Yeah. Joists?
Sure.
Are those horizontal or vertical?
I don't know.
I don't know
you
either.
Tried to talk shop, right?
Oh, man.
You so, don't you want an apartment?
You said yes
like
when I said joist.
I think a joist goes horizontal.
All right, cool.
Get in there,
cool,
John.
Cool,
I see
cool,
you
cool.
think.
So, look, have you started writing any new music? What's happening?
Yeah, I just finished recording actually at my mom's house. So on Long Island, I did some recording, and then I'm going to be writing another record as soon as I have a moment. But yeah, I got my friend, who actually lives across the street. His name's Joe. He lives across the street from the Knitting Factory. So every time I go to his house, I put in the address of this building.
That's oh, awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, and then I just took him to my mom's house. And she's a snowbird, so the house is empty, and we just kind of like made a record.
Wait, what? So just because she wasn't around and it was cheap, or like the acoustics are sick?
The acoustics ended up being good. The radiators are very loud. They need to be yes. bled. So that was an issue. You can hear a little clanking and steam screaming on some of the songs. But otherwise, it sounds pretty good. But yeah, he had a studio in Brooklyn and he just closed it. And he was like, I have all this shit in a storage space in Hoboken. You want to... Go get it, and we'll make a record. Like,
do you
sure.
write when you're on the road?
No,
no, never.
No.
You don't get like thoughts in the middle of the night and put them in like a dream journal and stuff.
No, I don't think about anything other than like I want to be sleeping.
I want to know more about Studio House though, because I like this stuff.
Oh,
so how long did it take to set it up to get ready to record?
Like a day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like whatever, like a little. rig. It wasn't anything crazy, and it was just like a few mics.
So. And did you like hop around from room to room to catch a vibe?
We tried to do the attic, and I thought that that would be really fun, and I like got all the shit out of the attic, and that's like 35 years worth of shit. Like I like put it all to the side, and I was going to have it all nice because it's all wood, but then we found out that it was terrible. Sonically.
Sounded bad.
You heard a Doppler effect of all the cars going down the street.
Yeah.
It was like, and constant. It's kind of like a high traffic street, so it's kind of a mess, but the den was fine, so we did it in the den.
I recorded a record once, and we recorded some stuff in the bathroom. This is a true story. Sounds like I'm making it up, but I was playing, and I was like, how's the sound? They were like, good, and then I stood in the tub. I was like, this could be better if I want a cleaner tone. And
there
I did not get this, number one this reaction.
That's one.
That is very cute.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny. I've told that joke actually on this stage before when I just realized I roasted beach slang. I did like kind of a greatest hits of puns, and that was on there.
What band is this that you did that for?
Beach slang.
No, that you recorded.
Oh, that was United Nations. That was like really early United Nations.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Laura, can you tell me about this music scholarship that your grandfather started?
Oh.
Is that like still a thing? Or did it, was it just like the one time?
I don't know if it's still a thing.
Because he wrote a very famous song, right?
Well, he was on the writing team of The Little Drummer Boy, but like he got like demoted from like number one. There's like, I mean, I feel like back then in like the 60s, just like, you know, things got complicated.
Yeah.
Tin Pan Alley bastards.
Yeah.
It's when the record industry was run by the mob, right?
Sure. Right,
everything was like suitcases of cash, no contracts.
Sounds great. I wanted to pay taxes.
For some people. I mean, I remember like the tour manager of Led Zeppelin, we used to carry around a pistol and a suitcase of cash. Whoa. How awesome is that?
It's pretty cool.
And then there's that like famous story, like someone tried to steal it at Madison Square Garden and stuff.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah, there's a book about that.
Yeah,
Black Dogs.
Black Dogs.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, your grand... Like, I know there was a music scholarship at Yale.
Yeah, Yale. Yeah, and I got a Yale shirt when I went because, like, when they first gave him, like, a plaque, he and my grandma are, like, I don't know, it was in their name. And so we went to the ceremony when they gave the first year's worth. So, like, I don't know if it's, like, a few years or if it's, like, ongoing. I have no idea how it works. But, and I went to the gift shop and I bought a Yale shirt. I still have it. But I wore it to my... Like my junior year, I met with my advisor, like my guidance counselor, and he was like, "You're kidding me, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's a joke," but I thought it would be fun. But yeah, not I didn't apply to Yale.
Oh, I thought you were doing like act as if, you know?
Yeah,
like when
fake
you
it till
wear
you make
a suit,
it.
Like your first day at McDonald's, you're like, "I'm going to manage this place." You know, that's the thing.
Like from where?
I don't know. I think I read it in like a How to Be Successful book once.
So it must be true.
It's got to be. If it's written word, it's true.
Yeah, that's a whole lot to unpack. you couldn't apply for the scholarship regardless of where you went.
No. Not for me.
And it's still there and it's still going on.
No idea. But maybe.
So you were close.
Who? My grandparents? Yeah. I just don't know exactly like what they gave and how, if it runs out or if it just replenishes. I have no fucking idea.
Is that
idea.
Where music started for me? Like was it with... him? Did you know him enough? Did you know about music through him that you were like, I think maybe me too?
Yeah. No, I mean, like I could play the piano. We had a piano in our house. So my mom was like, you know, when she saw that I was like 3 years old and like picking out sounds or like four, you know, then she was like throwing me into piano lessons because she was like, this is the one grandkid that's going to like carry it on. So yeah, but I mean, I never like played for them really. And I never like my grandma and my grandpa were both musicians. She was a singer, and a piano player. She sang with Benny Goodman and stuff. She was
really,
like, yeah, so she cool. was like really good.
That's awesome.
And her brothers were this like gospel duo called the McCravey Brothers that like, they have kind of crazy fans, but it's super niche. It sounds like horror music from a horror movie, you know, like like warbly.
Like the, who are they, the
Vaudevillian
the Leuven brothers, like those guys?
Are the Leuven brothers as old? I don't know.
Yeah, they demonstrate? Because I don't have this in my
head. I don't really know.
Like,
can't tell
like, kind of like that. So it's like creepy. It sounds like it would be playing on like some like, you know, old record player, but like the arm just goes by itself because a ghost turned it on or something.
Is it like the type of song that's like on the scratching loop record player when you walk into a scary house?
Yeah, and then
movie?
You see like, you there's a mirror and you see like little girls' shoes like run by, but then you turn around and there's
That was
there's
horribly
somebody.
Specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Has this happened?
This should I think about.
This is the attic in upstate New York. Yeah. God knows what happens up
I'm
there.
Afraid of everything, you know? It's,
I'd be terrified. You just explaining that place to me scares me.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're probably out in the middle of nowhere, old house. I know like late at night I'd like rip one and just start having some like wacky thoughts.
Yeah, that's why I don't smoke weed.
Yeah. This is when the axe would be in front of me.
Yeah.
Just ready to not use it if it happens.
Oh, just you have it just in case.
You think you could axe someone?
I don't think that's a verb.
Huh?
Like axing.
I've heard that a lot in my neighborhood. People are always axing each other questions.
Oh, axing.
It's when
question.
You are getting ready to go out and you just liberally spray yourself with axe body spray.
Oh, yeah.
That's called axing.
Sorry, I'm too busy heart staring Brad after that.
It's a GTL thing. It's like the, what was that?
Jersey Shore?
Yeah, Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. They do axing before they go out.
I was just talking about Jersey Shore with Chris Farron the other day.
Chris, who's that?
You know. Oh, you know him.
Oh, you mean the greatest musician on
yeah,
the earth?
It's wonderful. And we were talking about how, like, most of them were, like, really good people. We were, like, going through the line, and I was like, hell yeah. Snooki rocks. JWoww, I'd be your friend.
Wait, why do you think they're good people?
I don't know. They just seem like they care about each other, you know? Like, at the end of the day.
They care about each other.
You know what
other.
I mean?
It's just really friends for a new generation, but their lives are real.
Like I just like, well, maybe not the situation, but you know,
I did a shoot and an interview at one of the dude's houses on Long Island, and I couldn't tell you which one, just one of them, and
he probably had great abs, whoever it was.
Yeah, I mean, they were sick.
Yeah,
sick abs,
washboards.
Oh god,
beautiful.
But he'd bought this house for his mom, and he was just like, hey, this is my house. And he had a big statue of Leonardo's David and then a big statue of Venus de Milo when you walked in. I was like, that's got to be a joke. It wasn't. But he turned it on and turned it off. Like on camera, he was like the guy, but off camera, he was like, how are you? Good to see you. Everything was nice and polite.
And he had a British accent.
like he studied at RADA completely.
Snooki and JWoww filmed their offshoot show a block from my house in Jersey City. So literally like down the block from my house was parked like a pink snakeskin fucking truck. This is real.
That's
and I
cool.
guess when it was in Seaside, it got like messed with so much that they had to keep like literally two Jersey City cops there 24 hours a day.
Just to make sure nobody
cheated. The truck was okay, and then there was like a gate on the other side of the street for the random fans looking for a picture. And I found it infuriating that they were there. And I tried to ignore it. I thought the best policy was... I thought the best way to get back at people like this is to give them no attention, right? Because that's what they want. So I just tried to like mindfully ignore anything around that had anything to do with them. One day, I put in my laundry to the laundry machine and went for a coffee, and I'm ordering, and what do I hear behind me? That's like, hey, girl! And it was JWoww with some big dude, you know, with like sleeves up to here and the things and everything. He's all oily and dark and like all these cameras and a boom mic like almost hit me. And that's where I was like, fuck all this. Like, I just want to do my laundry, you know, have a coffee, watch things spin around, think about Earth and, you know, stuff like that. I got to deal with that shit, you know? That was the only time I got mad at it.
Aww.
Yeah, but that was my Jersey Shore.
You should have hung out with them. They seem like nice people.
I talked
all
to
I'm
the
saying.
Crew people a little. Because they nice. Rented a whole big... Yeah, they're like us. They're
Everybody's
just people
nice.
Who are getting paid to hold mics and who actually want to make films, you know, and stuff like that.
They're trying to pay the bills doing that shit.
They were cool.
They work on
cool.
their doc.
Wait, what doc? Oh, a doc?
Yeah.
About who?
I don't know. Whoever.
It's Snooki.
If someone walked up to you right now and was like, here's 50 grand.
I'll do it.
No.
Now think about this, Benny. Just think for a minute. No.
I got to buy a new furnace.
I didn't think it was going to go that way.
That's 14, 15 tops.
Well, whatever. You can do whatever the fuck you want with the money. So here's what I'm asking. If you could make a documentary about anyone for 50 grand, living it would have to be.
Okay.
Who would you do it on?
That's really hard. I don't know. Keith Richards? No.
He's alive. Barely.
I feel like he's got enough, you know,
yeah,
we know
there's
enough.
There's a lot going on about him already.
We know enough.
It's not something ska related. I would think with you it would be something ska related.
Oh, yeah, you do have a ska background.
Ska related.
You have a checkered past.
I do have a checkered past. I do.
Well done. Well done.
That's a toughie, though. I don't know.
The wizard speaks seldom, but when he does...
I don't know. Maybe just kind of a behind the music of Real Big Fish kind of thing. You know?
Yeah, that could be good.
That could be cool.
You know, just go on that ride with them. You know? That'd be cool.
There's never been an in-depth Real Big Fish
maybe a reason
story being told.
So am I like
you're
investing this money into this?
No,
or am
no,
I getting
given,
it on us
you're giving
off the
this
top?
Money.
That's a lot of trumpet players to go through. I don't think you'd have enough time and footage.
I feel like both
it.
Of you are too old. To respect
Real Big
second
Fish.
Wave ska.
That is, you know what? You are absolutely correct about that.
No,
yeah.
Brad,
that is true.
Brad turned the radio off for them.
Oh, there it is again.
See, I'm not as good at it as Joe. No, I saw Real Big Fish open for the Cherry Pop and Daddies, so that's my ska cred.
How long after Swingers came out? Oh, no, that was the other one, wasn't it?
No, was that Cherry Pop and Daddy?
No, that was Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. That was a different daddy
yeah,
altogether.
There was two that were exactly the same at the same time.
There was the Zippers of Squirrel Nut, and there was...
It's when, like, Arthur Murray Dance Studio all of a sudden was like, why the fuck does everyone learn swing dancing all of a sudden?
This Vince Vaughn guy is going to go far.
I know.
And shoot someone.
He shot someone?
No, he's just that. He's a pro gun nut, so...
He looks like the type of guy who would like drunkenly shoot someone.
Yeah.
I could see it.
And Favreau would be like, we were friends a long time ago, but now I do Avengers stuff.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know.
And that's where we are now.
He was all serious in that True Detective season 2, and I just wasn't into it.
No.
I like him better when he's just like goofing around. He's better at goofing around.
Four Christmases, great movie.
How do you take that guy seriously after all the things he's done? You know?
Oh, he was good in Psycho, though.
Oh, the Psycho remake?
What,
I heard a no out there.
Hard no. Just kidding. I agree.
The Gus Van Sant Psycho that said, you know what this movie needs? Color and masturbation.
That's what every movie needs. Yeah.
That's true.
Are you rethinking your 50 grand?
It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah.
Like, oh, shit. Yeah, this should be more sexual. Wait, so speaking of Chris Farren. Right?
Uh-huh.
So I asked Chris Farren for a mystery friend question.
Chris is going to love so much we're talking about him so much.
And listen to what this guy writes to me. I'm going to do it so I can do it. I write him, any luck? He writes, ask her who her favorite person is to tour with and why it is Chris Farren.
It is Chris Farren.
It is probably,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
Yeah,
and the reason why is because it's Chris Farren. I mean, he's a perfect person. He is really fun to, like, stay with. Like, we were just staying in hotels together, just me and him. And, like, every morning, you just turn, you see him, he's on his phone. You look over, you open your eyes, and he's like, what's up? And it's like, you know it's going to be a great day. We get to the venue early, which I love, and just hang out with
he's
my buddy.
He's a hard worker. He doesn't take the credit for that.
He is. He's very hard worker.
But homeschooled and a little strange.
Homeschooled, yeah.
We got to bring him down a peg. Right? Because we've been talking so nicely about him. He does weird stuff, too.
He is weird, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to specifically mention any of the weird stuff.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's
oh,
just
but
shitty.
I know.
No, there's a weird... You can ask him himself. But there's a weird hotel room thing he does that I'm not at liberty
is
to talk
about. Is it the backpack
about.
Thing?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you might know. It's gross and weird. And he does it. I don't know if he does it anymore.
Well, a thing that's not so weird.
Yeah.
It's a little weird, but it's not gross. Is that he just, as soon as he gets to a hotel room, he just dumps his bag completely on the bed. And he's like, I know this is a little strange, but this, I like to do this. And it's pretty cool because I don't even know what's in my purse if I did it. But I just get anxiety seeing it happen because I think about all the things that must roll
under hotel room beds.
Just to kind of like, yeah, just kind of like get a lay of the land a little bit.
Take stock of
life. With the stuff, you know? Which is actually really smart.
Yeah, it kind of is because I always find something in the bottom of a tour bag that I was looking for like 3 weeks
before.
Fun
surprise.
Yeah.
If you did dump your bag out, Laura, what do you think would be the weirdest thing you'd find?
I have a lot of like things that I find, like rocks and like shells and stuff.
Rocks?
I find rocks too. Do you take rocks from special moments
I do.
And you not remember where they're from?
Yeah.
Because that happens to me all the time.
I have a pearl in my purse that I found in my house when I moved in. I was like, oh, this is nice. And I threw it in my purse. And that's in there. I got a pearl.
But like,
a couple rocks.
I do that all the time. I find a rock in my bag. I'm like, this was from like a fucking moment.
Yeah.
And I didn't write it down.
You got to tag them.
No idea.
You got to tag them.
You've tagged your rocks.
No, but that's smart to do. Just put a little date on them.
Did you get it? Did you get the idea from doing that, from that movie With Honors with Joe Pesci?
No, because
that's where I got that idea.
Oh, is that Brendan Fraser?
Yeah, Fraser at Harvard.
Oh, Fraser.
Fraser. Oh, I'm sorry. Jesus. Never diss the Encino Man. It's the one where Pesci is the ghost of Walt Whitman in like a Harvard basement.
Bullshit.
What?
You're making this up.
C. Thomas Howell is like a college.
Pesci is the ghost of Walt Whitman?
Yeah. Well, that's what they call him. He's a bum who lives in like the basement.
Oh.
And then this like Brendan Fraser,
Fraser
starts out like all like snooty Harvard kid, but then like get some lessons in life, and then they you know, really like connect and like
yeah.
And then he ends up getting Moira Kelly at the end
From the cutting edge. I was about to say. Yeah. You and I feel like we've seen a lot of the same movies.
Probably
like
have.
I never have any idea what you guys are talking about.
No.
You don't?
No.
The cutting edge is really good.
Cutting edge, Moira Kelly, D.B. Sweeney, skating movie.
He's a hockey player, but he gets injured.
He's the hockey player with an edge.
Wait, am I dating myself? Who here knows what the cutting edge is? That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's a lot. Jonah,
that's like
50-60%. You were probably too cool for this stuff when it was coming out.
It's a really good movie.
Yo, I'm playing guitar, and I'm into things that are super subversive. And you just wouldn't like.
Was it was it on Epitaph Records or no?
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably just weren't willing to fucking turn on TNT and just let loose a little.
Yeah.
You know? It was always too cool.
Now I'm paying the price.
You are.
I'm so embarrassed.
And we were just like, yo, fuck it. We're nerds. We're just going to watch this
I'm
stuff.
Into what I'm into.
Yeah. It's disappointing to me that you don't know who D.B. Sweeney is. You probably
He's wonderful.
I do. He played Aang in The Legend of Korra. He was a voiceover artist.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to shut up.
Well, he was also the guy who got taken by aliens in Fire in the Sky.
Oh, my God. The movie scared me so much when they stuck the needle in his eye in the beginning
Terrifying.
Of the movie.
I watched that movie so when I was like 12 with Tyler Rand, who wound up being in Midtown.
Oh, cool.
We were middle school friends, and he forced me to watch that movie, and it fucked me up for like months.
So scary.
Because I was like, oh, wait, this could happen to me. I could be taken at any time, and a needle could be put in my eye and just preyed upon by aliens.
See, they know they'll take you if you're afraid of being taken, so just don't be afraid, and then...
Is that real?
Get taken. I don't know. That's what I would tell myself when I was little. But then it's like a cyclical thing because then you're like afraid of seeming afraid. Huh. Like a dog can smell fear.
That's
and then
true.
It'll attack you.
We just did an interview with Tom and Joe from Menzingers a couple weeks ago, and Tom's really into aliens. So when I was researching for the podcast, I did a lot of stuff. I just checked out some alien stuff.
Yeah.
And within like 20 minutes of looking into it, which I've never done, I think UFOs are fucking bullshit.
You do?
Yeah. Like, why did no one see one until, like, 1947 when everyone started fucking with aviation? Like, it just doesn't make sense. And it's so much more obvious to me that, like, some corporation or government would be doing fucking something shady than aliens are, like, checking us out. Like, I think if they were going to come do something, they would just
do something.
Do you
think they're just, like, spy vehicles?
I think it was probably some, like, company with a spy vehicle
okay.
or some like government with a spy vehicle, not like some race of people who's just toying with our emotions.
The grays. Well, there's the grays, sense. And then there's like the Nordic looking ones that are supposed to be really hot. I don't know. I was really into UFOs for like 2 weeks. And then my husband bought me he researched like the best UFO book for me, like, because he was like, oh, she's really into UFOs, I'm gonna get her a present. And then by the time it came, I was like,
not into over it.
Yeah, but I was into it for a hot minute.
I don't know, like, I want to think it's real and all this means something.
If you want to think it's real, it's real.
That's true.
Yes.
That is, all right, it is real.
It's real.
That's nice.
There you go. We've solved it. Laura,
no
thank you so much for joining
hey,
us.
Thanks
You're
for
our
having
first
me.
One out here for 300th episode. Woo! We solved UFOs. So there's that. Yeah, you can go whichever way you want. No one can tell. It's audio. coming to the stage now, as a gentleman, you all know, whether you know or don't, but you've probably seen him play in Bad Religion. He's touring right now with his band Dag Nasty. His band literally changed my life as a child, Minor Threat. Please welcome Mr. Brian Baker. Hi, buddy.
Hi.
True story, too, that life-changing event.
I was just going to go with that one. Life-changing. Yeah.
It did.
Tell me more.
I was listening to nothing but Bon Jovi and Cinderella and met that friend that everybody has who's like, hey, what you're listening to is shit. Listen to this, and I listened to Minor Threat, and the heavens opened, and I understood music, and it was great.
There's some good songs on Night Songs, Cinderella's third release.
Cinderella's
some quality ballads. But
I saw Cinderella open for Bon Jovi at the Cap Center way back when.
Awesome.
It was a delightful show to another Fairfax County native. Brian, thanks for joining us. You're a new northern resident now.
Yeah, I moved to Asbury about almost a year ago.
Jersey.
From
represent.
Know what I'm saying?
From Washington. I was in Washington, D.C. for like 40-something years.
Jonah, New Jersey's a state.
We're totally outnumbered on stage right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, three people live in New Jersey.
The civilized world versus Jersey.
I love it. Fucking transplants.
I'm not going to speak to this.
Are you and you're digging it?
So you live here?
In Manhattan.
Okay. Cool.
And why Jersey? What made you say like where is punk still alive? Is that why?
Yeah, well, that was my main thing is to find as much punk as I could. Cuz we're out of punk in D.C.
It's gone.
I don't know if you paid attention. There's nothing left there.
So, God, I got to find the bouncing souls.
Yeah, where can I go? And then that's exactly it. Really what it was it was very early in the morning of November 9th, 2016. And I remember shuffling down into the basement of my house in D.C. and starting to slowly pack up some artifacts from my straight edge career because I knew I had to get out.
Yeah.
Because I'd lived through a lot of administrations. But I just saw that this was different than the other one. No, bullshit. I my wife is from Asbury Park. And we're old. And we've been going there for vacation. And we had a lot of friends there. And we've been about 5 years ago, I said, look, we should just move here. And it took us 5 years to get our shit together. And so that's really the true story. I wasn't looking for anything. I just wanted to go to the beach.
Have you guys metal detected for coins yet?
You know, it's funny. I was doing some research. That's so perfect. In Bad Religion, I tour with people I've been with for like 20 years. So, sure. You know, we're all old. And the couple of my front of house guy, pretty much the day I showed up after I moved to New Jersey, was like, now you want to look into the white detectors. And
that's
and he had the whole rundown. And it seemed pretty cool. But this winter, I've been on the beach a lot. And there's, I don't know if I want to join up with that crew yet.
Yeah, the beach crew is tough. I mean,
because
they're really looking for, I mean, who carries change anymore either? Like, they're probably slim pickings.
Yeah, I don't think it's change they're looking for. I think.
What do you think they're going after?
I've noticed because I'm
nuclear fish.
No,
gold
it's just
blooms.
There you go. Like, some they want things that come out of the ocean. It's not so much the. It's a different group of people. The summer people who are just trying to get wristwatches and change.
Okay, but
these wintertime dudes they have a much bigger goal.
Civil War artifacts.
I've never spoken to
that
them.
That stuff
course,
is cool.
They're frightening. But
I got a friend with a small child who they go to like different sites in Jersey and Pennsylvania and dig up like old Civil War, Revolutionary War artifacts and bullets. And
well, you know, that could be illegal.
Why?
Well, I have some experience with Civil War reenacting before it was a bad thing to do.
And I was going to tell you that. I'd heard
a lot of these areas are protected.
You should Is that something you actually did?
No.
Oh.
No. I mean, I had a Civil War phase. I didn't dress up.
What'd you do? Would you collect?
No, I just, I had...
Dressed up?
I just collected the outfits, but I never put them on. In D.C., I realized one day that I was in kind of the center within a 100-mile radius of pretty much everything important, you know, or most of the important things that happened in the War of Northern Aggression. And so I got interested in it because I don't have a job.
Nice drop.
And I had nothing to do. And like most of the last 30
years. You called
it
what my mom was raised calling it. I'm from North Carolina. They were raised the War of Northern Aggression with that.
I don't.
That faux history revisionist bullshit.
Yeah, it's there's some people who have an idea about that conflict, and a lot of them are you can find in the wintertime doing a little relic hunting on the beach. Right. Yeah, still another crew that kind of like shut down my flowering into a full fledged member. I was just more curious about you know how things happened and a nice way to spend an afternoon.
What's your like number one hobby now? Maybe outside music.
It's right now it's bicycles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I'm really into road bikes and, that's another actually reason why I moved to New Jersey. There's such great riding, where I live. And so that's about it.
What's your typical ride? Like you map out a route or you're just
freewheeling?
Yeah, I do
like a loop basically if you ride too far, I just realize it's not that much fun for me anymore. So it's, I try to go out maybe like 3 hours and just do a nice circle that gets you from your house and back to your house with minimal hills.
It's a long loop, though.
Yeah, but it's...
3 hours?
Yeah, but if I'm not killing myself. I mean, it's just a nice little...
There's some nice boardwalks to go down.
You could just... Yeah, it's just a nice time to clear your head. And it's... you know, I think the whole... Kind of got into the whole road bike, you know, the Elan, the whole look. I think is kind of cool.
Yeah. Do you wear the cycling pants?
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, I got everything. Yeah, I have everything, but a lot of wool things.
Do you have the mirror on the helmet?
No. There'll be no mirrors.
As a novice cyclist, I always wonder because I see the people with the funny pants. I'm sorry, I'm calling them funny.
It's
I know
fine.
You wear
you
them,
just you don't understand their purpose.
Funny. And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, why don't you just ride your bike? Like, why do you got to do all that shit? You got to like, oh, what do you read? Cycling magazine and get into the whole subculture now, you know? And then I'm like.
Just put it out there, man.
But
just
then
let
I'm
them
like
know.
Riding my bike for 20 minutes and like my ass cheeks just hurt.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, oh, wait, there is something to these pants.
Now you're seeing it, right? Yeah.
So there is padding in these pants,
that's the whole point of the thing. Right. There's padding. It's not, there's no aerodynamic advantage to like a 50-year-old guy chub, you know.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes more sense.
No, it's just about if you're going to be on a bike for 3 hours, that's probably a good way to do it.
You know, you get judgy about shit and then you just look like a jerk, right? Yeah,
well, I do too.
Have you ever met anyone who has a Minor Threat, Dag Nasty, and Bad Religion tattoo, like the trifecta?
I don't, okay. Which is shocking. Because
there's got to be someone out
I know.
There.
I've seen a lot of, I've seen some Minor Threat, Dag Nasty double ups.
Okay.
For sure. I don't think I can't recall seeing a trifecta.
Huh.
I'll look for that.
Gotta find it. It's like the Da Vinci Code of your life.
Well, yeah. I mean, and they're quality logos. I mean, you really.
That's true.
They are quality logos. Yeah. Like, who came up with Dag Nasty? Was that you?
It was really a collective thing. The band name it was free associating in our drummer's parents' house. And the burning head is from the flyleaf of a book. Colin was kind of spooky. He was our goth member. Mm-hmm. And this was some, you know, 30s French dusty tome that, you know, he'd found at a used bookstore. And it had a pretty much the burning head logo. And we just stylized it a little bit. It was actually a full body. It was like a female vampire. And so we kind of made it a little more like a rubber stamp, like a little more hardcore.
Did you get when I emailed you about being on our 300th episode here? I did the in honor of Jonah, like the worst pun, I wrote, Brian, can I say it would be awesome to have you on our 300th episode? I don't know. Okay, just checking.
I don't see all the signals sometimes. No,
I mean, I had a field day writing it, so I don't know if that was.
He's a pun master, though. It's just hard.
Jonah's hard.
I feel like we've forsaken Junkyard a little bit in this interview.
I was just getting to it. Oh, Brad's wife was talking about how much she loved Junkyard when we were at dinner before this.
Now we got the beach rats.
What sort of phase was that sort of in your life? Yes. Like, what was the story behind that?
I'll say that I really enjoyed that band. I think it's an awesome band, and they do still exist. I just don't play with them.
Okay.
My goal at that point was I wanted to stop having a job and play guitar all the time. And this was the first opportunity that came up. I mean, it was really kind of a, you know, the guys in Junkyard were people, a couple of guys I knew from punk rock because it was a member of the Big Boys, and the drummer was from Decry. And I ran into the guy in the Big Boys in a 7-Eleven in California. I was living in L.A., and he's just like, oh, we have this band, and we have a record deal, and we need a guitar player. Do you want to come try out? Yes. Yes, I do. Where would you like me to be? And it was just that simple. There wasn't like a anything set up for it. Conveniently, I already had grown my hair out because I was, you know, that when you get so punk that you go anti?
Right.
Yeah. So I was kind of like, you know, long hair and like the white high tops and all. I'd already really, you know, crushed the dreams of all around me and disrespected those who brought me to where I was. So I looked right. And also I've played guitar pretty much the same way. It's kind of like the, you know, the poor man's Angus Young, Captain Sensible thing. And that's what this band needed. So... That's how I got there.
Now, do you still have the collectible card of yourself?
Oh God, yes! I just posted. I posted one on my Instagram account a few nights ago because I got I have a new trading card. I have been drafted as a member of the Asbury Park Football Club.
Oh, you're at Asbury Park FC now.
I am, and. Basically,
this is a very elite organization.
Well, it's even more than that because Pete Steinkopf and I are actually the Neptune City Football Club.
Oh.
And it's an
offshoot.
You're
competing, aren't you?
Well, it's an offshoot. It's a brotherhood.
You're like the B team? Yeah.
It's hard to describe. We have basically, I think Pete and I are the only members.
Whoever DJ plays for is going to win.
Yeah, well, he would be Asbury.
Yeah, he's
for
Asbury.
Sure. He is Asbury, actually. I saw his card.
He's very buff. The guy we're talking about is... He's very buff.
Yeah, yeah. He's a weightlifter model. What is that called? Where you're sculpted.
He just basically shows his body.
Yeah,
which is incredible.
Yeah,
for
it's
money.
Something I couldn't imagine. I don't know if he gets paid
in a tournament format. It's not. I mean, yes, maybe there's prize money. Sure, but
he owns a place where you can go hang out with cats.
He owns a cat.
Oh, I know him.
And
yes.
The funny thing about that is, like, you'd want to make fun of it because. It's a place you go to just like pet cats and like drink coffee. So it's like silly a little. But if anyone said this guy,
you'd want to make fun of it.
He would murder you. So it's like the funniest thing. It's like a mobster running like a cupcake place.
It's Catsbury Park.
Yeah, Catsbury Park.
If you're in Asbury.
But all the cats.
If you're in Asbury.
Listen, before you judge.
Yeah.
Which people love to do. These cats go for adoption. It's like, it's all to get stray cats in the homes. I mean, he probably makes some money. I don't know. You do have to pay to pet the cats.
He doesn't make any money, but they place a lot of cats. I mean, it's actually, it's a great thing.
It's not bad. It's not a bad thing.
If you're into cats, I would suggest checking it out.
Yeah. This is exactly where I thought this interview would go.
Listen, we're not putting animals in overhead bins or anything, okay?
That was too topical. This isn't going to air
too
in
close?
Time for that.
We already talked
too
about
close?
Tide Pods, which is so topical.
Yeah.
Now we moved on to
Brad, do you want to do your mystery friend for Brian?
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
We have a segment. What? You have one too?
No, not for Brian. No.
I've got one, but mine are ridiculous. You have to do. They're great, but they're ridiculous. You have to do yours first.
So this is a little segment that we do where.
Mystery friend.
Benny created it.
Thank you, Benny.
Try to prompt you on something from your past. And you'll tell the story, and then you have to guess who actually gave me this story.
That's good. That sounds hard.
Yeah,
I don't think it'd be. If you don't get it right away, I'll give you some.
That was a super like James Lipton explanation too.
If you could explain, there was a time that you made an assault on the Discord House because you felt like you needed to remix the Embrace record.
Whoa. That's fun.
Does this ring any bells?
Well, I do think that I would like to remix the Embrace record. This is one of my favorite records ever that suffers from the loudest hi-hat ever recorded. I don't know who gave you that.
Do you remember the story?
I remember, I mean, this is something that I have said in bars, like, and if I had it, you know, I'd really like to do it.
Supposedly,
an old Discord house.
Supposedly you were riding around DC with someone and you felt like Michael Hampton's guitar was mixed too low.
Was it Michael Hampton?
But according to this person, you actually went to the Embrace, you went to the Discord house and demanded the master tapes because you felt like you could remix them. And Ian greeted you at the door and said, and actually went and got the tapes and said, these tapes? And you said yes. And he said, fuck off. Well,
here's the thing. That's all not true.
Whoa. What? No, Brad, you got to corroborate this.
Who told you this?
Do you have any idea?
Well, somebody who isn't telling the truth.
I can't believe you made going off track fake news.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wow. Is this fake?
Sarah Sanders.
This is according to Andy Rappaport.
I have to leave.
Story.
See, Andy loves to tell a story.
I've been taken in.
This is a first for Mystery Friend.
Yeah. No.
We've been given an artificial story.
Now that I know who it's from, I mean, yes, he just, Andy's an actor. I don't know if that you know what that means, but basically he acts like someone he isn't on sometimes. It's like a role he's playing, and you never know if it's Andy or the role. And I think this was the role for you. He was just making a good story better.
He was trying to blow it up.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the type of guy just his name wants to be mentioned on here.
I like the story.
Successful. Yeah. Successful.
Steve, I love Andy.
Well played. Okay, I'll do mine here. All right. And mine don't have stories. They're just questions, and they're very Jeopardy-like. So, for what type of bass did Brian trade his custom-built bass to Chuck Dukowski?
A Dan Armstrong Lucite bass that looked a lot like the Greg Ginn guitar.
Oh, my God. That's like a verbatim answer.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Okay, I'll give you another one.
Yeah, the frets were in the wrong place, by the way. Like, it wasn't just not playable. It was actually built wrong at the factory and could never be in tune. Thanks, Chuck. That's my war now.
Nice.
All right.
Well done.
We're all going to have a nervous breakdown after that one.
Oh,
God. I should shut up. All right. The next one is, what did Rich the Roadie from Minor Threat do for a living? Which might be a good clue as to who gave me these questions.
Rich was a auto mechanic.
Okay, then no. It was not a good clue. Uh-uh. Rich the Roadie, according to this person, delivered the Washington Post.
He did. He did both, but yes, the real job would be Washington Post. That was the correct answer.
Oh, okay. Any idea?
Any idea?
Who the person sending me
the
these?
The mystery friend who asked these questions.
Oh, the theme that this all is based on. Okay. that is obviously Eric L. from Dove who sent that in.
No.
Ooh.
No. Okay, I'll give you another one because this person sent me a bunch. When you first went punk. We all have this moment. You used a Sharpie on what part of your clothing? I feel I've gone too specific.
I don't even know if they had Sharpies back then. They were called Marks-a-Lot.
Whoa.
I don't know. I have no idea. Shoes?
The white piping of your designer jeans, this person said.
Yeah.
All right. What was Ian MacKaye's favorite song in 1982?
I've had it. Black Flag.
Oh, actually, according to this person, it was Da 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 by Trio. All right, I have one final question.
This sounds like Steve Hanskin.
No. When you first ran into Henry Rollins after he had joined Black Flag, what was he clutching? This could go in any
direction.
Yeah,
that's a big... the world.
No ideas at all?
No, I don't really know who that could be.
You were in two bands with this person.
What was he clutching?
An eight ball.
Oh. Like a fun one?
No.
Like an actual...
No, billiards.
Oh.
Yeah.
You were this person you played in with the Meat Men, I believe?
Lyle.
I
should have known. Yeah, I should have known it
was Lyle. Mystery friend.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, there's Most of those are accurate. The designer jeans thing. First of all, those were my mom's jeans. And the reason I had them, because I was very... I was small. I was 15. I was about 5 feet tall, so I fit in her clothes. But they had zippers on the side. So they were my mom's designer jeans that I colored the piping in with a Mark Salott, because it had zippers, which I thought looked kind of British. Because I was just starting.
I also
dyed my hair with her hair dye for the first time. It was red because she dyed her hair red. So I learned a lot from mom.
Gotta find your way.
Mom was a big part of punk for me.
Now, legally, how many documentaries on the DC punk scene have to be made?
19.
Okay.
Which is good, because we've got two more coming.
I was going to say, there's so much to cover.
Yeah.
I saw something in an older interview you did talking about... Someone was asking you about the DC scene and like how, you know, if politics and the politics of DC actually shaped that scene. And you had said that it was actually who was in office that kind of dictated the culture of DC, because so much of the town was just based on the government itself. So when like Reagan was in office, was it just 8 years of conservatives running around DC? Or
I don't know how that applies. I don't know how old that interview is, because I kind of changed. I have a little bit of a better insight into it, because I think what I was trying to get at is that the tone of the city, as far as it applies to normal people who go to restaurants and work. But the punk scene always managed to not. It didn't matter who was in office. It was an interesting thing. It was this sort of the more. The more anti-democratic the administration was, the less light would be on us. And it was, you really could exist in sort of a, you know, nobody really paid attention to this artistic subculture when it was a Republican administration, because it just wasn't their thing.
Right.
I mean, yes, there's definitely a tone now. As I said, you know, if we go back to my November 9th exodus from Washington. And it's just, you know, it's, I guess it's like, D.C. is already a place that there's a lot of tourists. And, you know, there's that whole thing of, you're kind of inundated in seasons with people who really are, you know. I mean, I love the fact that they're there, but it's what it's like living in Manhattan or, you know, in New York. It's like there's a lot of that going on. And when you have these new administrations, it's these permanent tourists. And it's not, sometimes it's just not our best minds.
Right.
That are involved here. It's just a tough. The temperature is different, I can say. Yeah, I try to make it funny, but it's really kind of sad.
Sure. Yeah. Well, right now, sure.
Yeah.
So you still keep in touch with Tesco V?
I saw Tesco. I saw him maybe 3 years ago. I went to go see the Meat Men play in Fairfax, Virginia.
Oh yes.
And of course, I went there at like 10 at night with a friend and ran into Tesco and hung out. And we talked for about an hour. It was great. And I found out he was playing at like 1:00. And so I left because, you know, because come on.
Yeah. I mean,
I really thought the 10 was perfect. Like I'm going to get there right as they're going on stage. But you know, I'm out of touch, obviously.
I had no idea how much that you were a part of those records. Cause I remember when I listened to them in high school, cause you couldn't really talk about listening to the Meat Men. Cause they were just, A little offensive with the lyrics and things.
A joke band, yeah.
Total joke band, but some people didn't think it was a joke.
Well, they didn't get that. Tesco's is performance art. That's what he's doing here with that. I played on one Meat Men record and one like 12-inch sort of this combo. What was that? Do you know what I'm talking about? It was...
Nope.
Is someone that you talk to know, maybe?
Andy
Rapp, or
does Lyle know?
Yeah, it was Andy. Have him tell the story, because it'll be true.
Yeah.
No matter what.
There was a 12-inch that was a Tesco V 12-inch.
Wasn't Hate Police, was it?
No, it was Tesco V and the Meat Crew or something along those lines.
I'm sure.
The front cover's great, because Ian MacKaye's on the front, like kind of in a, like dancing. It's great. You should... I bet it's out of print. That's why no one knows what it is.
Another thing I hope you can clear up for me. So my band recorded a record in Austin, Texas once. And we went to a small studio, a guy named Mike Vasquez's studio. And we walked in and there was a Vox AC-30 there that we were told you played on Minor Threat stuff.
No.
And my guitarist went crazy for it and used it on our record. And for about a decade, we've been like, yeah, there's Brian Baker's AC-30 is on our record.
Yeah,
but I've never... like made this a truthful story. Are you telling me this is wrong?
Well, I never played an AC-30 on a Minor Threat record.
No. I'm pretty sure he played bass on Minor Threat.
Well, I just lied. You just witnessed me lying to about 250 people. Yeah. That I didn't know I was lying to.
That's all right.
Until now.
Welcome to America.
Yeah. I'm sorry to, but I think Lyle had an AC-100.
Okay.
Maybe on the last single. Because I remember he bought one of those and it was exciting that it was not a Marshall. It was like a weird thing.
You've never played an AC-30?
Well, I have, but not
on any other bands?
Well, yes, I just...
Maybe it's a Bad Religion one. I mean, it's almost as cool.
Yes, I'll be using an AC-30 exclusively on the upcoming Bad Religion recording that I'm starting next month. It's a blonde one I bought from Russo Music in Asbury Park.
I just wrote this down in like a book, like all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, sorry.
Not true.
No chance?
You're not burned as hard as Nate from the Foo Fighters who thought he had one of my basses? And it was because the poor guy, he has, so he's
doing okay.
He's got this bass. No, but I mean, he's a fan of music. You know, it's like, well, I'm sure he has. I'm sure he's fine. He's weathered the storm.
Sure.
But he's got this bass that he thought was mine. And it's kind of close to this one I had for a little bit. And he's been told it's mine by Steve Hanskin, who was in Minor Threat for about, I don't know, maybe about 8 months. Mm-hmm. We were five piece for a short period of time. And Steve is the one who was like, that's Brian's bass. So Nate thinks it's vetted by a Minor Threat member. And so when he's getting his signature bass made from Fender, it's going to use Brian's bass. It's going to be the, you know, it's like, this is it. This is the prototype and all of this stuff. And the, you know, his signature bass is being made. And all one day, like, I don't know any of this is happening. And he gets in touch with me and he's, you know, hey, I just want to let you know about this and all that. I was like, oh, well, that's not my bass. And
what
it was
his reaction like?
He was cool, but I mean, he's disappointed.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was kind of vague because there are not a lot of pictures back then.
Right, right,
and
right.
I did a little Google detective work and found a picture of me playing the bass he was talking about, and it has the one I was playing had the jack in a different part of the bass, you know, like on a P bass they go on the top.
Yeah, yeah,
but mine was drilled here for punk because this would snap off.
Right.
Yeah, so that's so that was the story of that.
Now, can we work something out where I can just keep saying this?
Yeah, sure, it's cool. Best amp I ever played.
All right, great.
Yeah, it's cool.
I wanted to talk.
It's a top boost one too. It's a good one.
I wanted to talk numbers with you for a sec. Bad Religion songs. How many do you have to know off the top of your head at any given moment? Like 800?
Well, I no longer have to do anything. I've been there long enough where I just do the bare minimum, and it's I know probably 200.
200.
And we play about 30 a night, maybe a little more than that, and we change the set every night. We probably keep a core of about 20 songs the same because people who want to come see Bad Religion want to hear a certain, you know,
sure.
Obviously you have to play Digital Boy or some of these Fuck Armageddon, these classic songs, but we change them all the time, and I think it's awesome. The only problem is that there are a lot that are the same.
Yeah.
And I'm not a lyric guy, so I know the words are different.
Sure.
And they're important for different reasons, but from my perspective, it's the same.
How often do you ever, like, get a part confused? Are you ever, like...
Oh, I've played entire songs that weren't the song. But the good thing is that a lot of the keys are the same, so, you know, with just a little pick slide here and a whoops there.
This is where I'm like, must be fucking nice to be a guitar player, you know?
Oh, man.
No one even knows.
No,
you're fucking up.
Yeah, and there's two of us, so at the very least, I could just be the other guy, you know, the new guy.
If I was a guitar player, I'd be so high for every show. Yeah. But I just can't, because everyone would know if I'm messing up. They'd be like, oh, that guy's fucking up.
Now, a lot of people don't realize that you almost weren't in Bad Religion. You're going to be another big band.
Well, no, I was offered the chance to be a touring guitar player for REM, which is right around their Monster tour. And that's a whole different thing because that's just you know, you're kind of like a crew guy. And I was going to play bass when Mike Mills was going to switch to acoustic. Just kind of like a utility infielder guy, which was a great thing. I mean, I really was, I love REM, and it was a great opportunity. But Bad Religion was, it just came up right at the same time. And that was to be a band member and, you know, contribute in that way. And that's kind of what I've always done. And, you know, I know where my bread's buttered, and it has a mohawk. I mean,
yes,
you know.
Right answer.
Yeah. Stick to what you know. Don't aspire to anything higher, damn it. Just.
Where's your mohawk, Brad? When did you bail on looking punk?
Down below.
When the kids came?
Long before.
I'm still so pissed I wore this button up.
Yeah. Next time you can wear a t-shirt, dude.
You know.
You can do it. It's a podcast. No one cares.
This is live?
At the moment, yeah.
I forgot there was people out here for a sec.
It's a good thing.
Hey, guys.
Brian, Dag Nasty, right now, you just did a couple of shows and you're doing more?
Yeah, Dag Nasty's been active for a couple years.
Original lineup now, right?
Yeah,
it's the original four guys. So it's that it's a really great experience because it's so... the jokes are exactly the same, and everyone is exactly the same, and nobody's changed at all. No one's learned anything. It's just, it's a joy. And we're playing actually, we're playing in Brooklyn, which at Brooklyn Bazaar, I believe it is the 30th of March. And we're playing in Garwood, New Jersey, the next day.
I've seen the lineup. It's great. It's so much fun.
Yeah,
weird cool. town.
Yeah,
would you ever do a show with like with Dave and Peter and get everybody up there and do it?
No,
like,
I mean,
no,
that's kind of like, I mean, this in the nicest way possible. Doing this DAG thing is because it's fun for us, and about being a, it's like it's not a review. It's not band and show. We're not trying to make it. You know, we're not gonna. It's not anything along those lines. It's just about. It's really fun to play the songs, and I think it's Sean is the singer. And Sean was the guy, I mean, he's why the band sounded like it did. Mm. And he's also, he's just awesome. It's, I don't need more singers.
That's awesome. A great way to end. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Brian Baker. Go see Dag Nasty if you haven't. Good heavens. Thanks so much. If you hang out, we'll say thank you again. If you leave, that's cool too. We appreciate it.
Oh yeah, I might be leaving. I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, coming to the stage right now, if you didn't go see any of the Jawbreaker shows here in Brooklyn, then you fucked up. Please welcome to the stage one of our all-time favorites, Mr. Blake Schwarzenbach. Unless he's out.
Oh, no, he's coming up behind you.
Oh, there you go.
He's pulling a Batman.
Oh, nice.
You did do the wrestling thing.
We did the wrestling
thing. Yes, we talked about this.
I
needed to open the ropes.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us.
Like, this stage must feel so small to you right now.
That was a Tobias Funke entrance.
Are you a never nude?
Yeah.
So, first off, I want to thank you for fucking up my Instagram feed for a month with only giant Jawbreaker backdrops. That's all I've seen for maybe like 30, 40 days now. Ever since the chronology went out the window.
We spent a lot of money on that banner.
Yeah, yeah. There's something people don't realize about those banners is that you are legally bound to make them fire retardant, which costs a lot of fucking money.
Retardant.
Isn't that what I said?
Oh.
All right. Do you think I said fire retardant?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
All right.
Did I?
A little bit.
What are you going to do?
So you have one of the banners. My question is for both of you now.
It's okay.
With the banner, because this was the discussion for every show I saw, because I went out to Riot Fest and saw the banner.
Did I say that?
Super psyched.
I did.
And who keeps the banner? Like, where does the banner go? Because it's gorgeous, but like...
The banner steward.
The steward?
Yeah, you have also... Sorry, it's a union rule that you have to hire a banner steward.
Ah, fair enough. So it's local
banner wrangler.
Local banner 406-451. This is going terrible.
No, you keep it with your stuff. They actually get really small. That's the incredible
thing. How small
thing.
Does that banner get?
It fits.
Probably like what? Like a hockey bag?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you need a good roller. but that's all it takes. Yeah, it's not like you'd imagine like when a rain delay at a baseball game happens. It's not like that giant thing that sits on the side that's rolled up. Yeah, it's a lot smaller. You carry it around.
It could fit in a suitcase.
Yeah.
Like a Samsonite. Mm-hmm.
It's magic fabric.
But they do cost a ridiculous amount of money, like something you wouldn't think.
Yeah. So when we try to break it out any chance we get, but right. It only fits in a big room.
Mm-hmm. Right. To hang it.
Yes.
And this is a new one for the newer shows. You had it made?
We've never had it. This is the first banner we've ever had.
Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine you had a banner back then. So when, I can't imagine, you guys were talking, you're like, we probably got to come up with a banner. Like, did someone bring
someone
this to
made you get the banner, right?
We have worked with Bill from Monsula, who tour manages Green Day, did for a long time. He was kind of our inside person who said, here's what you have to do.
Right.
You're going to do all these things that you don't want to do. It was just for Riot Fest.
Yeah.
At that point, that's all we were going to do. And he said, you might want to think about a banner. That's like $8,000. And we were like, why would we buy a fucking banner for one show?
I remember thinking the first time I had to order one of those, and I'm like, thinking about going to Alpha Graphics to order my first roll of stickers. And I'm like, oh, it'll probably be something like that. Like 100, 125. Something like that.
Right.
Someone's like, no, you need this super special fabric that, you're legally this and it's going to be $10,000. I'm like, fuck you. I'm not doing that. But then you have to do it, right?
Yeah.
Did anyone try to get you to do some kind of crazy production, TV screens or any?
No, we wanted to do that.
Yeah.
We couldn't use anybody else's screens. So we, what we did was we pulled the whole stage in to make it a living room was our ambition.
Pretty cool.
And they just, instead of hiring a lighting technician or whatever, all this was really expensive. We wanted to be close to each other because we're a trio. And that's how we did it. We wanted I wanted a lamp that would come down right in the center, but that didn't happen.
What was the thought process to lead up to this Riot Fest? Because the rumors had abounded for years, and what made it this is the time. This is when we're going to go for it.
So many strange things aligned. It just so happened that we all had the kind of desire and peace of mind to do it. And people were having cataclysmic things had just happened in their life. I was incarcerated for a short period of time in San Diego County.
That's pretty cataclysmic.
For instance.
Yeah.
That's something. Is that something you're allowed to talk about?
I had heard tale because you had done...
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. Okay. I guess I just did, so...
You did. You're good.
There's no NDA on this stuff. I mean, we like to think of this as a safe place.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel that way?
Well, I learned how to protect myself inside.
Mm. So, wait, did you did real time?
Yeah, I was in jail for 60 days.
Holy shit.
In county.
Yikes. Wow, that's no joke.
San Diego is no joke.
Yeah.
What led up to that? What got you in jail?
The charge, I got me in jail.
You got you in jail, fair enough. Fair, good answer.
But the charge is vandalism.
Okay.
Which I'd like to think is kind of punk rock.
It is pretty
punk
rock. That's a good
I attacked
one.
Property.
Ah, okay.
And in the state of Orange County, let's say, they really, property is very dear. It's held in higher regard than most people.
Right. I knew that from Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And then you played some shows to kind of get money to come back here. Is that true?
I did.
Okay,
yes.
I heard that and I was like, yeah.
What kind of an urgent relief fund. I just did a couple solo shows. One was a house show in Fullerton and one was a club just to get money quickly.
Yeah.
It worked.
Damn, that's great.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine the Jawbreaker thing went very far on the inside. Right? It's not you met someone in there who's oh, Jawbreaker, dope. I'm going to help you out now. Right?
No.
No chance. So, what did you... I mean, did you just keep your head down? Did you think read books Robbins style? Or?
I did keep my head down. I got beaten pretty hard.
Shit.
One time.
Wow.
The thing, what people don't realize about jail, or what I think, because I learned this, is that they don't tell you when you go into jail what the rules are.
Right.
The jail rules amongst inmates.
Mm-hmm.
And they should do this. And I want to actually start advocating on behalf of new inmates to create like a fact sheet of what you can and cannot do.
Right.
Because jails are racially segregated very fiercely, self-segregated.
Yeah. Sure.
And there's all these rules about what things you can touch, what tables, who you can associate with, et cetera. And I had to learn these things by getting beaten.
Wow.
Because they don't tell you, and then they beat you, and then you learn.
So what's a fuck up you did? Like something
that- I went in the black shower.
Oh, shit.
Like I know. I go, oh, of course. Like,
yeah. This is something I wondered
about.
Any
frame of reference.
Like, I've been close.
You have brought this up a lot.
I have, because I've been close to getting locked up a couple times. And I'm like, I'm a Jewish dude. So, like, the second I get in there, the whites are off the table, right?
Yeah,
You've asked who you would roll. No fucking way. And I'd have no crew.
You'd be white in jail.
Even a Jewish would even be white in jail?
I think so.
Would I have to fake it?
Well, the choices were
I got Hebrew on my arm.
I don't know. I mean, it's like black, Latino, white, Asian, Arab. Everyone else is in other.
Right.
Which is the Asian kind of panoply.
Gotcha. I would say this means like kill all Jews in Hebrew. I'd be like, yo, I went deep.
There weren't a lot of white power dudes in the white
sect
there. No. And we, you know, everyone was very affectionate and like looked out for one another.
Okay.
It was interesting. I mean, we could do a whole show about this.
Yeah. So what was
next time? Get Mike Ness on. We'll talk.
I wouldn't mind doing a whole show about this. Like, I mean, music is boring. Like, this is interesting. This is actually interesting. You know.
So what was your state of mind like, sort of, when you got back to New York?
I was a wreck. I mean, I was just damaged, changed. Yeah.
And how long ago was this?
Two and a half years ago.
Oh, wow.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then everybody
I realize this is a very long way of answering the question of like, hey, so how'd you guys decide to get back together?
I love this answer.
It's the real story.
I don't like the fact that you were locked up, but I like, I mean, you said cataclysmic events.
It makes the triumph all that greater, right?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, coming out in front of 40,000 people in Chicago with my parents on the stage and all our families and everything, having just... You know, gone through something like that was
profound. This turned into like from a cool story to like someone's got to make a movie about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if you have $50,000, I will make that documentary.
I just stipend it to Laura like literally an hour ago.
Yeah,
I think we could pull this off. All right, well, so I know you didn't find any Jawbreaker fans in jail, but there are probably some rich Jawbreaker fans kicking around who would throw 50 G's out to tell this story. I think I could write a tweet right now, and by the time we're done with this, we could probably get the dough.
Fundraise.
I'll go fund me this shit. Sounds great.
I don't want to do that, though.
No. Okay. Well, that's really up to you. It's not up to me.
All right, so fast forward. You're doing Riot Fest, and you guys are back together, rehearsing, whatever. How do you choose... sorry, I don't want to bore you talking about music, Benny. How did you choose the set list? Like, how did you come up with the songs?
We a little bit like what Brian was saying about Bad Religion. We figured we owe it to anybody who's coming to, like, we got to play the core most popular songs. The only most popular songs we didn't play were ones we could not play that just didn't sound right. They weren't working. So, like, Chesterfield King, which is kind of a fan favorite, it just wasn't happening. We tried. Couple I couldn't sing, really. They were just in too much of a high register for where I'm at now. But basically we just found 10 that were like, we got to do these. And then 10 that we knew we wanted to play really badly. And,
yeah, because I don't know if I haven't seen you guys 25 years ago. I don't know if I ever heard Ache live.
Yeah, there were a couple that work now that didn't then. I think bands all have this. It's strange the way your catalog will kind of become viable, and then some songs go out of, I don't know if you've had this, but something's not working, you take it out of rotation.
And what was it like being back in the room? Like, did muscle memory kick in, like, with you guys?
It was pretty intense for the first few practices, because we were back in San Francisco. San Francisco has changed so dramatically. You know, the Mission is not the Mission anymore. But we have these songs that were very much of the Mission and the same three people. So it was emotionally kind of exhausting. We'd play for 5 hours, and I was going through like a lot of reliving those stories in the songs, and you know, that was kind of exhausting. Then it became very fun once we started to figure them out and know that it was going to work. It was more like, hey, let's just play.
Yeah. Is there any things that were like, sometimes when I kick back to older songs, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I don't know why I wrote that part, but it's ridiculous. And I never write it now. But are parts like that like difficult to like get a hold of again? You know, something that you were doing out of pure excitement maybe 20 years ago and now you just have to try and pull it off?
Yeah. We watched a lot of YouTube videos to learn the basic. I looked at tab charts online.
Really?
Just to get an overview. You know?
Were they pretty accurate, the tab
Close
charts?
Enough. Yeah. Close enough. And then once I got in the kind of zone, I was like, but it's me, so it's going to be wrong and idiosyncratic. And,
right.
You know, I kind of, some of those weird three-fingered chords came back.
Yeah.
We found most of the things just through repetition and heat.
Right. I had heard you say at some point that, you know, part of the reticence for like getting Jawbreaker back together wasn't the whole political and social element behind it, but more just like the physical part. Like I literally just can't get on stage and execute these songs like the way they were. Is there any, like, what did you have to do to get ready for these shows, like physically?
Just play a lot, really.
Yeah.
I didn't start training. I did start training a little before Riot Fest. I was in bad shape.
Yeah.
For a while.
So it's just getting the endurance. So
you can see it. You know, I've lost like 30 pounds since Riot Fest.
Wow.
Really?
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think you had it to lose.
I don't think people realize the physical element of like just playing guitar and singing at the same time.
For an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's
for us, that was a long set, and that we were contracted to do, you know, we were playing last, so we had to really do a show.
There's a reason like Mick Jagger's got a treadmill on his rider and shit, you know?
We only stay at places with gyms now.
Oh, that's good.
For me.
That's important.
That's my rule.
What was it like kind of walking out there, that Riot Fest show, kind of walking out to that kind of stage?
I've been watching the stage for a long time because we were there for 3 days.
Okay.
And so I knew it, you know, but I did stand in the wings. Like, there were two stages parallel, and Prophets of Rage were playing right before we did. And it was a little daunting because they're such a show, and you could just see it in the next stage that there was these lights and, like, fireworks and guys jumping around and people flailing in the crowd.
Be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, God, you know, it's going to be interesting to have this little like click, 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 three-piece band with no lights or ideology, really. But I stood, my mom is a longtime meditator and Buddhist, and she was on stage and there was all these people lined up and I just like sat, leaned up against the wall with these all these people, and I looked over at my mom, and she gave me the look that was like when you go into deep meditation, you know, and you're on some freezing mountain or something, and you get the like 2,000-yard stare. And I did that, and I just completely disembodied myself in preparation, just like I have to not be here at a certain level in order to be here.
Sure.
And kept that for the first 5 songs. And then it was very fun. And I think each of us did that. Like, I talked to Adam and Chris, and everyone had their own place they went into just to get through, just to break the ice.
Cool.
I mean, it was a phenomenal show, and I'm not saying that as like a beyond fan. Did anybody here go to Riot Fest? Anybody? Flew out there? Yeah, represent.
Hey, thanks.
It was phenomenal. It was incendiary. And when I saw you in Brooklyn, because I went all 3 nights, because that's me, thank you to my wife for saying yes, please go. When you played Jet Black at one of the shows in Brooklyn, you said, how could that not have been a hit like in 95? And a friend of ours, Trevor Kelly, posed this question. Did you know the book Kanye West Owes Me $300?
By title?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you know that book? Did you read that book?
I did not read that book, no.
It's Jonah's book, and I forgot to bring it, sorry. But it's
I didn't write it. It's got Jensen Karp wrote it.
Yeah, but Jensen Karp wrote
you
it.
You have my physical copy.
The copy I have belongs to you.
Okay,
yeah. We've unpacked
this. I'm going to clear that up.
Thank you. Okay, so in the book, Jensen Karp, it was his rapper, and right when Eminem was getting big, he got signed by Jimmy Iovine, and under the rap name of Hot Carl.
I know what that is.
John. And he said, he talks in the story about when he signed to Jimmy Iovine, he said, like, you're not going to fuck me over, are you? You're not just signing me to hold on to my record so that I'm not going to compete with Eminem as, like, another, you know, white rapper kid. And Trevor had this idea of the question of, he said, you know, when Dear You came out, it came out, and I remember buying it, and everyone was excited. Then all of a sudden, it seemed like it wasn't being, they stopped pushing a lot of copies. Mm. And I'm not trying to go conspiracy on here, but do you think there was a conspiracy
to suppress you, the
to
success
suppress
of
you,
the
you guys were so damn good? I'm not saying that like to, you know, blow smoke, but like it's such a solid record, and there were other punk bands at the time with popularity, and I don't know if that ever.
What would be the end game of that conspiracy? Like, what would they
for them to sell more because they don't realize that you guys are much better? You know what I mean? Or to keep the competition away.
Oh.
Sell more records, I guess, is the end game, which at that particular time people enjoyed doing.
Right.
You could say no.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was just a kind of a heady record in a time that was about, in radio world, it still is about instant meaning and content.
Right.
And it was like, it's a slower burn. Kind of made sense to me. I never thought, really, I don't think any of us thought we would be this big radio band. Mm-hmm. They're kind of downer songs, and they take a while to sink in. For us, it seemed hook laden.
Yeah.
I thought, like, yeah. Well, this sounds like a radio ready song. Yeah, but
so. I had a question about another thing. You said at the Brooklyn show, you called out Jesse Lacey at the first show. And I was curious. I felt like all my friends are like, Blake knows who Jesse Lacey is?
I know. I felt, you know, do you dignify that with, like, bringing up someone's name who, I don't know him. I don't know their band.
Yeah.
I just know there's.
Why did you feel like that was important?
Because it's part of this culture that I'm associated with.
Right.
Mostly in the press, not in real life. These aren't my friends or anything. We don't hang out at the pop punk ranch.
Sure.
I think that's
Brad,
the,
you remember the
Warped
Tour,
ranch.
Basically.
Where is that
right?
ranch?
But I felt like, well, I could say something about it, that it's not just in Hollywood, you know.
Yeah.
It's actually been pretty rapacious in male punk music since I began. There's always been rape allegations and shady people who glom onto scenes and kind of predate.
Mm-hmm.
Predate? Can you say that?
Yeah.
Sounds
Preditate? I don't know what the verb would be.
I don't care if it's real.
Act predacious within that community and then get shunned and move on to the next one. So that was the celebrity of the moment, I guess.
Right, right.
Very Catholic, you know? Church.
Yeah, I think that's cool. That's important.
But, yeah. Right. I also feel like, and here I go talking again. Here I go explaining over you guys.
Do it.
No,
you
please,
men with
please.
Your podcast. Let me tell you something.
Please.
I tried to say very nothing about the Me Too movement because all I read about is men getting in on it.
Right.
With their say-so. So sure. Mostly I've been quiet.
I understand.
I thought that was an important one, though, because I think if there's anything happening, there's not people like willing to step out. And I think your general disassociation with like what had been going on in emo and punk is a good thing, because a lot of people know who Jesse Lacey is and a lot of people might have something invested in that relationship and you don't give a fuck, which is good. And that guy needed to get called out and you're willing to do it. And I actually like appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I do think that there is too much of people just getting on stage and trying to explain the situation, I don't think there's enough people like going head to head with it and really like calling the people out or like, you know, really getting into it. So when it happens, I don't think it's a problem to shame the people who have actually done the actions. And I don't think there's enough people doing it. So I appreciate it.
Well, especially. I'm not in the industry, really. You know, we aren't. We're like made guys now.
Yeah.
Kind of are. We're not really trying to do anything.
You're De Niro.
We're just playing.
We've got our.
It feels pretty good. I got to tell you, it feels good. It's not where I was 2.5 years ago. I'll tell you that. You know, just another number in the joint. Getting my ass beat by like a bunch of white dudes.
Wait, I thought you wanted.
That's another thing too. You can only be beat by a person of your tribe, your ethnic tribe.
All right.
So only white guys could beat me up, and then they lovingly they tell you afterwards.
I didn't
want
to go back to this.
You know why we did that, right? You're cool, bro.
Really?
It's like,
I didn't want to go back to this, but since you did, so
you wanted to circle back to this so bad.
Well, there's two things I'm interested in. I'm still interested in what happened, if you're willing to talk about it, and what you just said. The actual jail politics of the fact that you apparently stumbled into the black shower but were beaten by white guys. So were you, they were told to beat you for this, like,
well,
for this misstep?
In that instance, a representative of the Brothers, that's the group.
Yeah.
There's Others, Brothers, Woods, and Southside, which is a Latinos.
I know that from the POD song.
Those dudes were cool.
Yeah.
They do all the good artwork in there.
Holy like, shit, like, POD.
Southtown. It's an all right song.
Keep going.
All right.
So a representative from the black group went and talked to some dude in the white group and said, your boy, like, fucked
up. You
have
to do this.
So you need to make an example of him. And then they said, you know, this is going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me. They didn't say a thing. They just took me in a cell and pounded me.
Fuck.
Lord.
But
I'm sorry.
That's how it worked.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so are you allowed to talk, you know, is vandalism charge and stuff like this? Can you talk at all about what actually happened?
I trashed a car in a Motel 6 in Carlsbad.
Okay.
Because I didn't like the way it looked.
What was the
I was having a kind of psychotic episode, let's say that. But let's, to put it in perspective, let's just think about this. I am a, at that point, was a person of modest income in his 40s and who had a psychiatric crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on 3 years probation and did 60 days of jail time. And just think about what is happening in this country right now, the billions of dollars that are being shifted offshore and these things with, you know, like no legal repercussions.
I have none. Yeah.
None.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm I'm a made guy. I'm like a white guy with an education. So imagine then what it is for everyone of color, of anything else.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I'm telling you what you already know, but this, I lived it for a moment and I was, and I'm still living. I'm still on probation. I'm a first time offender, you know?
Yeah.
I messed up a car. 3 years. I'm still a felon.
It's crazy.
Wow.
So, is this an issue for you at all? Traveling out of the US?
It is. I can't travel internationally. Yeah. I have to get a permit for wherever I go.
Right.
Is that on the table? Is that something that this band is talking about?
Oh, we want to go abroad for sure. Who wants to be in the U.S. right now? I mean, other than like these shows, which are music events and art, you know, cultural events are good, but yeah. But I'm up for, I'm going to be free in about 6 months.
Right on.
So then we'll.
Any more U.S. shows planning or?
We're playing a festival in Seattle in June, Upstream. I think a new one.
Sure.
Yeah, I saw the lineup. It was cool.
There's some good. Yeah, Hot Snakes are playing.
Flaming Lips. Flaming Murder Lips. City Devils.
Wow. Zola Jesus. I've never seen. It'll be cool.
Any chance? I'm sure everyone's asked you this, but have you guys? Do you think you would ever write more stuff or what's?
Yeah, we're that's our summer is going to just be trying to write.
Awesome.
Jam. You know.
The way we used to, like, got any riffs?
Bivouac era is kind of what we're wanting to feel.
For Jawbreaker, how had it worked in the past? And
you know, I'm trying to remember. We're all trying to remember that. We've talked about it because everything has been kind of remedial now because we'll have a big show and then we'll be like, God, we got to get tight on the material, the catalog. Sure. But what we really want to do is just riff out and see what comes. So I'm spending the next month writing at home. And then we're going to converge in San Francisco and just go in a studio and see what happens.
Do you usually write like riff first, not melody first?
It changed over time, but I think when I said bivouac, like I think we want to. I like the more band-like jams that we have, or Jet Black, or songs like that, though that only can be a as a unit.
Anyone for all else of us, just their heartbeat a little faster? You said they're going to be writing. Like anybody else? And I'm trying not to like freak the fuck out, but I'm doing. For those of you who know me and have been in the room where they said, just leave Blake alone, which is at least two out of the three people on this stage right now have done that with me.
That's kind. That's kind. It's for our own excitement. We can't keep playing these same songs.
Right. Oh, gosh,
I mean, they're wonderful when people have not seen it. And, you know, we're lucky that there's all these people who want to see it. But we've need new songs to make it exciting.
Sure.
Do you think about, like, do you have any lyrical ideas? Like, do you have a notebook you've kept, you know, anything like that?
I have tons of notebooks, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I just don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still remembering the process.
Yeah.
Usually it's just a line and then a guitar and then you kind of extrapolate from there.
There's something super special about the three of you guys together and the way you lock in. And because, I mean, I've seen Jets, Forgetters, Joan and I saw Thorns a couple of times together, and all those great songs. I enjoyed all of them. But when that crew, like I figure as the crowd, we can feel it. It must be insane when you feel it.
Well, I went to high school with Adam, the drummer. So there's a pretty deep thing there. And we all met we met Chris in college, which is now, 30 years ago almost. Mm. So having had those relationships for so long and having learned how to play music together, because we were kind of all of each other's first real band. Mm. I know bands have that. I guess we have that too.
So it's like
weird
almost
shorthand, psychic kind of stuff where you're like, you want somebody to go somewhere and they're already going
right.
there.
Right. In well, terms it's of interesting because you knew them so young, playing with them must be like, it almost like trained you as the player you are. Right? After you play with somebody so long, their influence eventually maybe like comes off on you and finds its way in even into your next band or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found it really hard to be in the beginning of Jets to Brazil. I was like, I don't know how to do this.
I mean, those are two very different drummers, Chris and
yeah,
for sure.
It was really, that band was so fun because it was all of us were kind of discovering like, it's kind of like actually getting out of a grueling relationship and then seeing someone new,
right?
I'm like, I can do whatever I want with this.
First
that,
interview,
that kind of was the like the playfulness of Jets to Brazil in the beginning. We're like, I could get a wah wah pedal. I could bring a wah wah pedal into the relationship.
You got it. Yeah,
no one would frown on that.
I interviewed you for Alternative Press when Four Corner Night came out, and it was my first interview I ever did. I was an intern there.
Wow.
And
did you still have the Jufro?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did. And I remember.
Are we calling it the Jufro?
I remember
asking
you what influenced the record, and you were like, this band Wilco, and they had like two records. I was like, oh, I should check this band out. Like, I didn't even heard of these bands at that time.
Mm. That's probably Jeremy
yeah.
Chatelain, who's like very savvy too.
Were those bands sort of a big influence on Jets? I mean, did you get a lot of influences outside of punk and that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all just like learning to listen to new old music because we were at that age,
Yeah.
Is Jawbreaker now, like these shows you're doing, is it the first time you've ever been on a bus?
We're not on a bus.
You're not still not on a bus?
No.
Wow.
Because we only do like two shows at a time. It's great.
Backdrop like that and no bus.
Yeah, it comes in a flight case. No, it's great. We fly in and then practice for a couple days and then.
And you're using, are you flying in your gear or are you using rental gear?
We are. I mean, we rent the cabinets and everything, but we bring the guitars and
for the
heads.
For the Brooklyn shows, you take an Uber home or how do you get home from Brooklyn?
No, the bands and crew stayed at the Williamsburg Hotel.
Okay.
You know that
very
over
nice.
On White there? It's, yep. It's very quiet, I'll tell you that. They have these like triple reinforced windows, which I loved. So you can't hear a thing.
It's party town.
And I live here. I live in Brooklyn, but I was like, I want to stay with you guys. So I stayed at the hotel with them.
Nice.
Because I wanted to get in on it.
Sure.
So we just had a rental, a minivan. We
nice.
Drive over to the Brooklyn Steel and then back.
Beautiful.
A near mile and a half or something. Yeah, it was great. I took a train. I took the G home one day and fed my cats and like hung out with them in bed before the show.
That's nice.
And then went back to the Williamsburg.
That's cozy.
Yeah.
That's great. Awesome. Yeah. So, hey, man, I guess we're all going to Seattle. So we'll see you there.
Yeah.
Come on out. It's a great scene out there. Great
it's
music
be
scene.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We couldn't think of a crew better, especially you, to be on our 300th episode.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations. Going off track.
Thank you.
300.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You guys are like Spartans.
I mean, Blake Schwarzenbach, everybody. Good Lord. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. That concludes our 300th episode. Thank you all for showing up. Thanks to Knitting Factory for having us. Brad Goop, Benny Horowitz, Jonah Bear, I'm Steven. I put the podcast bills on my wife's credit card. Thank you guys so much for being here. We'll see you in 300.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.